she's real fine, my 409.
This is the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by Autoflex Leasing on 105.3 The Fan.
Well, I saved my pennies. Good morning. Welcome to the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by Autoflex Leasing with your host, David Blassingame.
Good morning.
Tammy Pickard.
Good morning.
Colby Sapp.
Hello.
And me, Sybil. For the first time ever, David is actually sitting down. Did
I know,
you notice
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I thought I'd do it like a news guy does.
Something was wrong.
Wow,
yeah, it's sort of strange.
I am shocked.
Have you injured yourself?
No, I'll try it this way. If it doesn't work, we'll do something else.
Interesting. All right. You can give us a call here to the studio. 877-881-1053 is the number. As always, our AutoFlex Leasing fan text is 43733. And, oh, look at Tammy. She's standing up
Tammy's
now.
Tammy's going to stand up. Yeah, that's good.
This is like a role reversal. Y'all are blowing my brain right now.
Throwing off my equilibrium right now.
Me too.
I don't think this mic
it's easy
will
for
get
you
tall
to say.
Enough.
I'm just going to get under here then, under the console, under so we're all at different levels. All right. You can also call AutoFlex today. David, what are those numbers?
Either 817 or 972-234-1234, 888-234-1234, out of the area. And it is, of course, always AutoFlex.com, where you can see our pre-owned cars. You can apply for a lease online. You can actually follow the stories that we do online at AutoFlex.com. And there's some really cool, AutoFlex.com's Facebook page. And there's some really, really cool videos this week on the Facebook page. There is a commercial that is absolutely hilarious. It is an Audi commercial, and it's on the AutoFlex Facebook page. And it's worth seeing. It's a little Star Trek-y, and it's very, very funny.
Nice. Do you have the Geico commercial that you guys were just talking about before we started the show?
No, but I need to go ahead and post that, because that is hilarious.
The camel, he's cute. He's very happy that it's Wednesday.
Hump day, yeah, yeah.
That's the commercial. It's very
funny. Guess what day it is.
Nice.
Happy
they
Wednesday.
Have so many mascots. They have the lizard. They have the pig who drives the car. Yeah. They have...
Right.
The camel now, they have the two guys playing a guitar. They have the stack of money with the big eyes.
Yeah, well, and the two guys playing the guitar are behind a lot of the, they do the camel thing.
Oh, okay.
How happy are they? They're happier than a camel on Wednesday.
Got it.
It's hump day.
Love it. So go check those out, the AutoFlex.com Facebook page. So this is a good story. Let's get right into it. Which cars get the most complaints? Because probably if you're listening right now, you might just be driving one of these.
Well, and here's the thing. The cars that have the most problems aren't necessarily the cars that don't sell as well. Some
True.
Of the best-selling cars have a lot of problems. One of the things you get when you do business with AutoFlex is unbiased advice. Because we do all makes and models. So we don't really care what kind of car you get as long as it's a good car. This is a true representation from the National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration of the cars that get the most complaints.
I didn't even realize people would complain to the NHTSA.
Well, they are the ones that track all of the information that the manufacturers send in.
Oh, okay.
So these are not necessarily the worst cars or the best cars, but these are the cars that got the most complaints. And what they did was they measured between 2008 and 2012, and they took that, between 2005 and 2012, and then they based that, the number of complaints between 2005 and 2012, on the number of vehicles sold. And that's where they came up with their numbers. So,
and then they divided by...
100,000.
Oh, no.
Anyway, the two, round it up.
Exactly. Yes. So if you looked at it, the number one or the worst vehicle, 10th worst vehicle for complaints.
The most safety complaints.
Yes. Well, and some of these, it's a stretch to say they're all safety, although a complaint about maybe how a seatbelt fits or a seatbelt that won't class properly, that's a safety. So they're included. Anyway,
but that's what they're referencing.
Number 10, or the 10th from the worst, was Hyundai with 27 complaints per 100,000 cars sold. Total complaints in 2012, 1,025. The model with the most complaints was the Sonata. They sold 3.7 million cars, Hyundai did, and everybody's sales have been going up since 2009. 2009 was the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's sales have been going up since then. So you're going to see more complaints per year because they're selling a lot more cars per year than they used to.
Right.
But if
that
you
was number 10.
That was number 10. If you just looked at the numbers and did a raw comparison, Hyundai was number 10. Number 9, and this was surprising.
Can I add to the Hyundai thing, though?
Sure.
Most of the complaints were related to powertrains, interior electronics and hardware, and airbags and seatbelts.
Yeah, exactly. And you're going to see a lot about interior electronics and hardware because number 9, Ford.
The MyTouch system.
Exactly. And they're a great selling car, and they have tremendous loyalty. People go back and get Fords again and again. Some of the highest loyalty in the business, but also some of the highest numbers of complaints back to the MyTouch system again, and that was one of the big ones. Number 8 was Volkswagen.
What was the model with the most complaints for Ford?
The Escape.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Ford Escape.
Okay.
Yep. Volkswagen. It's with 34.52 per 100 models with the most complaints was the Jetta. Interior hardware and electronics, number 1 in that number.
And that's 34 per 100,000.
Yeah, 34 per 100,000.
It doesn't seem like that many. I mean, really, 100,000 is a lot.
Right.
To it just is. Have 34.
Well, but you have to have some basis for comparison.
Right.
And some cars don't have a lot of problems, and some cars have more problems. And these are the cars that have had more problems reported.
Gotcha.
Yeah, these are the top 10 for the most problems.
Yeah, so Volkswagen was number 8. Not really a big surprise there after doing Volkswagen business for a number of years. They have little problems.
Mm-hmm.
BMW, number 7. And that's not really a surprise either. The 3 Series was the most complained about vehicle.
And out of 676 complaints, 175 of them centered on the airbags and seat belts, while an additional 150 complaints were related to the car's powertrains.
That must be common, because that's what the deal was with Hyundai, too.
Right. Number 6, Nissan. And again, a lot of Nissan sold. Not the brand loyalty, though, that you see with some of the other models. Just 42% of Nissan owners bought another Nissan after their first one. Far worse than, say, Chevrolet, Ford, or Honda, or Toyota, which have at least 47% of their customers coming back. And if you look at a difference of 5% in those numbers, given the numbers of cars they sell, that's a lot of people that don't come back and get another Nissan.
Yeah.
Number 5, Dodge. Well,
did you mention the model with the most complaints for Nissan?
Sorry, Altima.
Altima.
And that's what they sell
the most of.
Yeah, so it makes sense.
So it makes sense, yeah. Dodge was the next in line at number 5 with 39 complaints per 100,000 cars sold. And the issues involved powertrain. Larger number of complaints were powertrain. The Grand Caravan received more complaints than anything else.
And they sold half as many vehicles as Nissan.
Yeah.
Yikes.
They had more complaints and sold half the vehicles.
Not good numbers.
Number 4, and same manufacturer, Chrysler, 40 complaints per 100,000 sold. The most complaints, Town & Country, which is the other vehicle compared to the Grand Caravan. So the Town & Country and the Grand Caravan, which are virtually the same car, had the most complaints on that. Number 3, and this was no surprise at all because I've known people that have had them, the Smart Car. And they don't sell many cars.
And they've sold so few cars, but they've had a lot of complaints.
If you looked at 2012, they only sold 10,009 Smart Cars nationwide. That's 834 cars a month nationwide. That's 16 cars per month per state, basically. So they're not selling many Smarts, and they're having a lot of complaints. 56 complaints per 100,000 sold. And that's over that same period from 05 to 13.
Now, I was very surprised about number 2 being a Jeep Wrangler.
Well, I was too. But again, you're back to the same manufacturer, Chrysler, and they've got some quality issues, and they're working on them, and they're getting a lot better. The other thing, though, is the Jeep Wrangler, they've got great customer loyalty. And people buy them and keep them.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes the number of complaints doesn't reflect directly in the loyalty to the brand or the repurchase of the same car.
Yeah, they're looking less loyal because they wouldn't buy the same one again.
Now here's one that's no surprise to anyone.
Wait,
again,
can I mention the complaints on the Jeep?
Oh. Yeah, go ahead.
Powertrains, interior electronics and hardware, again, like you guys said, chassis,
right,
suspension and axles, fuel emission exhaust systems, and steering components.
Right.
So if you're driving a Jeep, beware for those.
Yeah. And again, we're talking about 69 complaints for every 100,000 cars sold. So not a huge number, but it's a number. And many, number one, many. And that is no surprise to anyone in the business again. They're great little cars. I love them. They're great driving little cars. But I am told by people that we lease them to that they have regular problems with them and they have to put them in the shop.
So Mini Cooper received the most complaints.
Yep. Mini Cooper per 100,000 cars sold. And that's 123 complaints per 100,000 cars sold.
Well, I'll tell you, for that particular vehicle, I think that the people buying them have an idea that you're going to get the quality of BMW with that car, but still only pay $20,000 for it.
Right.
And you're not. So.
Well, and the other thing is the car has a huge cool factor. Mm-hmm. It's very cool. And it's got tons of really cool stuff on it. It's got great equipment on it. But it's got a lot of gadgets. So they run into the same thing that, say, Land Rover does, that has all of the gadgets, all the bells and whistles. If you have that many things, some of them are going to break.
Yeah.
You know?
It's very true. And it says on the Mini Cooper that a lot of the complaints were for steering, which I was a little surprised by because, like you mentioned, Tammy, the BMW has the same steering, and those are so tight and great. I love steering the BMW.
Well, and there may be an issue with that thing being so low to the ground and such tight suspension and everything being so tight on it. Maybe they're knocking it. I don't know.
Yeah, and well,
I don't know what the issues are, but maybe there's some expectations that people have, and that car just really can't fulfill them.
I think that's a really good point. I think people have very high expectations of the car, and they're somewhat surprised when they're not met in general.
Mm-hmm.
I got no problem with the car. I think it's one of the
they
coolest cars out there.
They still have fabulous resale value, though.
Yeah, they do. Some of the highest. That and the Wrangler.
I know, yes.
Yeah, the Wrangler's got huge,
the two
huge
with
resale
the
value.
The highest complaint factor are the two highest resale value vehicles
on the whole
pretty
list.
Much on the market.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty
well,
well
definitely
on
this list, they have the highest resale values, and they've always had super high resale value. They're really good to lease, and you really do well when you buy one, and then you need to get out from under it. You're ready to trade it. You really don't get hurt too bad.
Right.
So, interesting.
All right. Chevy Malibu drivers, listen up. When we return, we are going to talk to you about the new model. So stay tuned to the Saturday Morning Test Drive brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing.
We're back to the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing.
Welcome back to the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing. David Blassingame, Tammy Pickard, Colby Sapp Gargamel is what I like to call him, and me, I'm Sybil. Hello, how's it going? Good morning. So we're here every Saturday at 9 a.m. You can give us a shout if you're going back and forth between a couple of cars. Maybe you have a question. 877-881-1053 is the number. You can also send us your AutoFlex Leasing fan texts at 43733, and you can call AutoFlex today. What are the numbers, David?
Either 817 or 972-234-1234, 888-234-1234, out of the area, and always AutoFlex.com on the World Wide Web, where you can do anything you can do at a car dealership from the comfort of your easy chair.
Mm-hmm.
You can apply for a lease. You can learn about leasing. You can schedule test drives. You can... and here's an AutoFlex Leasing fan texter. I have a 2005 Tahoe third row rear AC in excellent condition, clean in and out, no dents, 112,000 miles. What could I expect to sell it for? Well, here's what you do, Jeff. Go to AutoFlex.com and click on the icon that says free black book appraisal. And if you do that, you will be able to get a free black book appraisal right there from AutoFlex.com. And that's easy and fast. Anyone can do that. And it's one of the services that we provide.
And you can do it in your jammies.
You can. And you'll know what your car's worth.
Or your boxers.
AutoFlex Leasing fan text. Who do you complain to about your car? Well, call us. Call us and complain. And we'll listen. And we'll be very, very sympathetic. Just give us a call.
877-881-1053 is the number.
That's the complaint number. Give us a call.
Well, I do think that they were referring to these complaints about the top 10 cars with the most complaints, and those were compiled from service departments who then provided the information to
the NHTSA.
NHTSA.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Easy for you to say.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the 2014 Chevy Malibu.
Yeah, now this is really an unusual story for General Motors because General Motors used to be like a battleship. When they built a car that wasn't well accepted, the first thing they did was they'd go out and defend it. and tell the consumers why they were wrong about not liking their car. That was the old GM.
Right.
The new GM is entirely different. The new GM makes changes quick. The new Malibu was introduced in 2012 as a 2013 model, Chevrolet put a bunch of money into the release of the car and a lot of publicity and all kinds of good stuff. And guess what? People didn't like it. It just didn't sell that well.
Mm.
And it's really been a disappointment to Chevrolet. So instead of defending the car and trying to tell people why they're wrong, they're making a new Malibu.
Wow.
And this is a switch. It's a huge switch in GM. It's an 18-month turnaround on a model, which is terribly expensive for a manufacturer to do. But now they know from experience it's more expensive not to do anything.
Right.
And to try to convince people to buy a car they don't like. So, interestingly enough, in 18 months, we've got a new Malibu. And the only other car that I can recall turning around this fast was the 2012 Honda Civic.
Right.
And the Civic in 2012 really got bad reviews from consumers. Not
they got
consumer
blistered.
Reports. Yeah,
right.
they got spanked because the interiors were cheap, they were loud, the seats weren't comfortable. And in 18 months, Honda built a new Civic.
Boom.
And it was a huge, much better car. So Chevrolet has now done the same thing, which again is very unusual for General Motors, but it is the new GM.
So if you have a 2013 Malibu, is that the only year that particular model was made?
Well, it came out It came out in 12. It was a 13 model.
It'll be a collector car.
Yeah.
It may be a collector, but nobody's going to like it as well as the new one. Anyway, the new one is going to be out shortly, the 2014. It's much roomier. It's better looking in the interior. It's a quieter car, more rear seat room, just a lot better car in general. It's really good to see a quick response to consumers from General Motors like that.
Mm-hmm. How about the 2014 Cadillac ELR?
Yeah, this is the new electric hybrid from Cadillac. And, you know, let me hold this up to the microphone. Folks, is that not a great-looking car? It really is a good-looking car.
If only there was a website where you could go and see all these stories.
You could go to autoflex.com and click on our Facebook page.
Oh, there you go.
And then you can see the 2014 Cadillac ELR. It's based on the Volt floor. It'll travel up to 35 miles on pure electricity. At that point, the 1.4-liter gasoline generator kicks in to extend the range up to 300 miles. But I'm just telling you, and it's a great-looking car. Car's going to cost $60,000-$70,000. Nobody's buying this car to save oil.
Right.
Because they're spending a lot of money, and it's going to use electricity, and I'm not sure that saves oil anyway. But it is a great-looking car.
Cadillac has had the hybrid before, right? Wasn't there an Escalade with a hybrid, or am I completely wrong?
Yeah, okay. No, they did the same. They did that with the same thing they did the Tahoe with, same floor and same platform.
Gotcha. So check that out, Cadillac ELR hybrid coming out next year, or I guess maybe at the end of this year.
Yeah, end of this year.
Cool.
And it's just a great looking car.
So a lot of people are taking road trips. Summertime is on the horizon. They're going to be driving. And this is a good little list of ways to beware of bad gasoline choices.
Well, here's the thing. There's different gasolines in different parts of the country. And so if you're out there driving around, you need to be aware of the fact that up in the mountains, up in the Rocky Mountain area, Colorado to the Dakotas, they sell an they sell a 15% ethanol with a low octane rating, 85% octane rating, and an 85 octane rating. And it's not good for all cars. In fact, it's not good for most new cars at all. They used to justify it because cars were carbureted and they didn't need the higher octane to drive in the thinner air of the mountains.
Right. The lower octane actually helped the vehicle run more smoothly.
Except nobody's got carburetors anymore.
Right. In honor of the National Spelling Bee, can anybody spell carburetor? Text in your spelling of carburetor.
But don't Google it first.
Or carbureted. Yes, no cheating.
C-A-R-B-U-R-E-T-O-R, carburetor.
Good job.
Yeah!
So, Sybil wins the spelling bee.
Nice.
Anyway, when you're buying gas, in Texas, it's not an issue because they don't sell lower octane gas in Texas. You're going to get ethanol at a rate of about 10% everywhere you're going to buy it. If it gets to 15%, the manufacturers say if you've got older than a 2012, it'll harm your car.
Great.
So, yeah. So you have to know, and there's a couple of states now that are going to have laws that you have to post on the pump if it's got higher than 10% ethanol content.
Well, that's the issue. They're not posting on the pump, so you could be putting anything in your car and not know it and damage your...
Yeah, and you're going to get 10% anywhere you go no matter what. Pretty well all gasoline right now here. Is 10% ethanol here. Yeah.
Well, what about up north?
Everywhere.
Okay.
So keep an eye out for that.
Traveling the E15.
Autoflex Leasing Fantex.
They won't be selling that in Michigan, they said.
Autoflex Leasing Fantex. Love the 2012 Civic. Hate the 13. It's comfy and quiet. Well, you know, that's why they say there's one made for every seat.
That's right.
Exactly.
Somebody will love their 2013 Malibu.
I'd included this last week, and I didn't talk about it, but the growth of leasing, and it's really sort of a phenomenal story because leasing is growing much faster than car sales are growing. And it's really sort of, it's great for us because we're in the business, but it's really sort of phenomenal because I think more people are realizing that leasing is the least expensive way to drive a car for most people. Most people keep a car between 3 and 5 years. Most people finance a car between 5 and 6 years. So that means that they pay for the car the entire time they have it, and before it's paid for, they trade it and they get another car. Well, those people are leasing right now.
Right. They just don't know it.
Without the benefits.
Exactly. They don't have guaranteed resale value.
They don't have a lower payment.
They have to worry if they have scratches or dents that it's going to hurt their resale value.
You're not getting gap coverage for free.
Exactly. So there's all kinds of things you don't get. But I think more and more consumers have gotten smart, and they see that leasing is a less expensive way to drive the car they want to drive for the time that they normally keep their car. It doesn't really affect the time you keep your car because most people trade between 3 and 5 years. Now, there's a couple of things. I mean, here's the reality of it. You have to worry about mileage. Anytime somebody says, hey, don't worry about mileage, drive it like you own it, you can't because it's a lease and it's a contract. That's the other thing. And you hear people say, hey, don't worry, it's easy to get out. Well, it's not. I don't care whose it is. It's a contract, and it's for a period of time, and it's for a certain set of miles. So what you do is you tailor the lease to your particular needs. If you're going to keep the car for 3 years, get a 3-year lease. Don't get a 5-year lease and listen to a salesman say, oh, I'll get you out early, because guess what? He probably wasn't there 3 years ago.
Right.
And he probably won't be there 3 years from now. So you have to realize that your contract is the only thing that's important, and you contract the car for how long you're going to keep it, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, however long that is. Don't take it for a day longer than you plan on driving the car. Mileage, same thing. I can put any number of miles you want me to in there, but we have to know about what we got to put in there because otherwise it's going to cost you. And what I don't want is at the end, I don't want a surprised customer.
Right.
So I want customers to understand you write it for the right term, you write it for the right number of miles, and it works beautifully. But there is no magic. And the things you hear, the advertising, the things you hear, don't necessarily reflect all of the picture. They just tell you, oh, well, you can do this. There's no penalty. Well, guess what? There's no penalty in most leases to get out early. It's not the penalty you got to worry about. It's the value of the car. Because the lease is designed to depreciate or pay down along with the value of the car. So at the end, the residual value in the car are worth the same thing, which means earlier, if you want out, you have to pay that difference in what the car is worth and what the payoff is. There's no penalty involved, but you still have to pay the difference. So beware all of the – there's no magic. Like I say, it's just a contract. It's a number of miles. It's a time period. And make it right. Set it up for the right number of miles. Set it up for the right term. And then everything else works. It's a great way to drive a car. And it's growing faster as an industry than car sales in general. In fact, much faster. Right now, 22% of all cars sold are leased in the United States. That figure dropped down to 9% in 2009. So it's a huge, huge growth.
Yeah.
And people are doing that because they find that's a less expensive way to drive the car that they want. And here's something interesting, too. We find that most of the manufacturer's program lease, their leases are only for 3 years. But I talk to a lot of people who say, well, I want to keep my car for a long time. And then I tell them that we offer even a 5-year lease. And then at the end of the 5 years, you can decide at that point if you want to purchase the car and still keep driving it, or if you'd like to trade it in or turn it in at that time. So it gives you a lot more flexibility when you do work with us, because we will offer a longer term lease for those people who like the longer term, the longer ownership and even a lower payment, or we can do the short-term leases for people who just want to drive that car during the factory warranty period.
The only thing we won't do is put you in a long-term lease until you can get out short-term, because you can't.
Right.
Oh, you can, but it costs you.
Yeah.
And it's not the penalty. It's the difference in the value of the car. So it's like sort of half saying things. Okay. Autoflex Leasing fan text. I saw three new leases from Autoflex in Stephenville yesterday. Wow, must be true. Very nice.
How'd
Stephenville.
They get loose? How'd they get out of
that? No. Speaking of gas, Autoflex Leasing fan text. Speaking of gas, I was in Nebraska a few months ago and noticed that premium gas was cheaper than regular gas by 15 cents. It was unusual. Why would that be? I would think someone made a mistake.
That's what I was going to say. That is unusual.
I don't know. That is
unusual. It is Nebraska.
Well, no. There you have it.
Someone switched the sign or something?
I don't know. That's very funny.
Huh. All right. We got to take a quick break. We'll be back with more Saturday Morning Test Drive brought to you by Autoflex Leasing.
We're back to the Saturday Morning Test Drive brought to you by Autoflex Leasing.
Welcome back to the Saturday Morning Test Drive brought to you by Autoflex Leasing. Your host, David Blassingame.
Yes.
Hi, Tammy. Hi, Pickard.
I didn't know the mic was on. Sorry.
Oh, it's on.
Yeah, well.
Tammy is pacing. Colby Sapp.
She's pacing and is wearing me out.
It was not pacing. And me, I'm Sybil Summers. Good morning to you.
I'm tired of the clouds.
Now she's jumping. Me too. I'm telling you.
It's supposed to rain today and then clear out a little bit,
1 o'clock-ish,
I think.
Yeah. And every day we wake up and it's been the same overcast weather this whole week. I don't know what's going on.
I don't remember when I moved to Seattle.
I know, right? And every once in a while there's a little bit of sprinkle, but it's still humid as can be and like 85. It's the most confusing weather ever.
My new plants are loving it though.
Yeah, oh, I know.
It's good for the grass and the flowers.
True that. I haven't had to water my plants in my backyard for a week now, which is great. Yeah. So hopefully this will break off though at some point. Maybe we can have some sunny weekends.
Autoflex Leasing fan text. My door locks are broken. Any advice on what I can do to save money and not have Lexus drain my wallet? Well, I've got a really good mechanic that's done work for us for years. His name's Jim Coble. He's got a place called Advanced Automotive, and I would give Jim a call and let him take a look at it. He'll probably save you some money. He's
behind TI over in Floyd Circle. But if you call me on Monday, I've got his number in my cell phone.
Yeah, it's
turned off right now.
972-235-1938.
Good memory.
There you go. Jim Coble, Advanced Automotive, and he's a really good guy. I trust him with my cars, my kids' cars, and he fixes cars for Autoflex also.
Nice. All right, let's talk about those gas myths.
Yeah, you know, everyone.
So, yeah, that's
gas myths.
Gesundheit. Everyone likes to knock big corporations and big companies, and one of the things that you hear so much about is, well, these gas companies, they're making so much money and they're taking advantage of us. And I just thought it would be a good idea maybe to look at exactly what goes on with a gas company or an oil company. First of all, oil has to be sucked out of the ground. Sometimes they have to drill as much as 7 miles down, sometimes sideways, sometimes in the deepest part of the ocean to get oil out. So it's terribly expensive to get it out, and then they have to pump it through billion-dollar pipelines or put it in monstrously expensive ships to move it around the world. Then it goes to big refineries, which cost billions of dollars, and they refine several types of gasoline, and then it goes into very expensive trucks that transport it around the country to put it into the pumps that we use it in. And it still costs less per ounce than bottled water. Which is pretty easy to come by in comparison. Another big oil myth. Oil companies make excess profits. I mean, if you look at Apple, they run on about a 24% profit margin. McDonald's, they make about 20% on the dollar. Oil companies make about a dime.
Wow.
Yeah, but everyone wants to knock big oil and talk about how gas is too expensive and things.
I think it's just misplaced, though, because isn't it those futures traders? Isn't that the people that are manipulating the stock market that are really manipulating the price of the oil, and aren't they the ones that are really getting the richest of it all? I mean, I don't know. Or is that a myth?
It's a myth. Okay. Per gallon, Exxon, and you got to think about this, too. I mean, what do you pay for your gasoline? If you buy a gallon of gas, Exxon makes seven cents, right at 7 cents a gallon. The government makes 27 cents on that same gallon. Now,
tax. That's
exactly.
A tax.
Yeah.
That's
so
the average gas tax.
Who's making money on gasoline? Exxon, who produces the gasoline, gets 7 cents, and the government taxes it for 27.
Uncle Sam.
Yeah. So now the government announces, well, gas costs so much that we're going to put tough economic standards in, and we're going to build cars that get a lot more miles per gallon, and it's going to save everyone money. Well, here's the truth. They're building smaller cars. They're not as safe, just by virtue of the size.
Right.
They're lighter. They're built with lighter weight materials. Again, they're not as safe by virtue of the size and the materials they're built in. And who pays for that? It's going to cost
We buy the cars.
It's going to cost about $3,000 a car more than it is right now to improve the gas mileage to where the government wants it improved. But we pay for that. The government doesn't pay for that. We pay for the additional $3,000 a car.
And that's right. The manufacturers pass the cost of making a more economic car. They pass that on to the consumers. They don't need it.
That's right. So if it's going to cost them $60 billion to make these changes, they don't care because they're going to charge us more.
Because everybody has to do the same thing.
Exactly.
All the car manufacturers have to meet the same standards, right?
Exactly. So you don't have to worry about being faster or better or build a car cheaper than your competition. All you have to do is build cars because everybody's got to build with the same standard and the price is going to go up. And guess who pays for it? You and
we
I.
Do.
Yeah. So it's sort of funny how people's concept of gasoline and costs and money go, because the reality is the government makes more money per gallon than any oil company does. And the mandates the government makes to the manufacturers to build more efficient cars cost us money. It costs the government nothing.
Okay, I would like to know from our listeners, our AutoFlex leasing fan texters, what is most important to you when it comes to a new car? Is it going to be the styling, the safety features, the cool technology, or fuel economy?
Well, and that's the thing. We used to build cars to the wants of consumers because consumers dictated, we want a stylish car, we want a faster car, we want a car that has better safety features. Now we build cars to the standards that the government sets based on fuel economy. And those other things are secondary to the manufacturers because it has to be. The government mandates what they must do. Is that the most important thing to you? Because I don't think it's the most. I mean, fuel economy is important, but I don't want to drive an Econobox.
Right.
You know?
Right. So call in and let us know what is most important to you. 877-881-1053. Let's check in with Shannon in Dallas. Good morning, Shannon. You're on the Saturday Morning Test Drive.
Hey, good morning. Thanks, guys. Like listening to the show.
Thank you for listening.
I read something on a myth. I drive a 2001 Chevy Tahoe, and I heard this myth, and I started doing it, and I think I recognize the difference, but I'm just trying to figure, maybe it's in my head. I don't know. I heard that when fueling, that the best time to fuel is in the morning when the ground is cool, because you'll get more solid fuel and less vapor, because the pumps are designed with vapor that suck the vapor back into the car, so you actually get less product. Even though it's pumping out the gallons, you're actually getting less. So your miles per gallon go up because you're actually getting more solid fuel. And then the other myth I heard was that not to fuel when the tanker trucks are filling the tanks, because it stirs up the soot inside the tanks and could get in your car and mess that up.
Okay.
I wanted to check the validity on that.
Well,
I've heard all of those things.
Yeah, yes. I have too. And the first thing, the filling up in the morning rather than the afternoon, and the reason I heard was that it was cooler and that the gasoline would actually be denser because it was not as warm, and it would be warmer in the afternoon and it would be less dense, and so you would get less fuel that way. I really doubt that makes a whit of difference. From what I read when I was reading about that, no one could really say that made a large difference. If you're at an older gas station, for your number two question, and there is a tanker truck that is there putting gasoline in the ground, that's possible, I guess, and that's pretty easy to avoid, I would think. So it's possible that they could stir up some sediment in the bottom of those big tanks that they store in. So that, I would say, is probably something that might be valid. On the number one, I don't think that's probably going to make a whit of difference whether you fill up in the morning or the afternoon, having to do with vapor or having to do with the density of the fuel. I think it makes so little difference that it probably doesn't matter.
And isn't really that what the fuel filter is for, is to clean out that sediment and stuff that might be in the fuel?
Well, but you don't want to take
You don't want to plug it up too fast.
Yeah, you don't want to take gasoline into your car that's contaminated with something. But again, you don't really deal with a lot of contaminated gasoline anymore. That was from the 60s and 70s, and I think they figured out a way to keep that from happening pretty well.
Cool.
And then if I could comment on the second part of that question that you guys, what would we want in a vehicle, like style or fuel economy?
Yes.
Honestly, these days, the way this economy is going, I'm leaning to the eco box. I mean, I would rather... I hate filling. I mean, it costs me $85 to fill this Tahoe up every time.
Wow. Wowzers.
It just makes me want to throw up.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I love it when fuel gets down in the twos.
Sure.
Because then I'm only filling up for like $50-$60. And I'm like, I would rather save money and buy the stylish things for my house and just drive something that'll get me from A to B.
And more and more people, I think, agree with that, and I don't disagree with it at all. And I would not ever argue against fuel economy. I think fuel economy is very important. The point I was making was that the concept of what government regulation does and the reality of the regulations and how they affect us sometimes is different. And you have to have another view of that, I think, and that's what I provided.
Yeah, we're definitely not against good fuel economy.
No, and I'm not against government regulation because the NHTSA is a fabulous organization and it keeps us all safer. So I'm for that. I'm not sure that I'm for mandating strenuous economy. I think you said it. If you're wanting better gas mileage and you're going to buy a car that produces better gas mileage,
you'll go buy it.
Exactly, and manufacturers will respond to that and build more cars like that because that's how they sell cars.
That's business.
When you mandate that from the government, though, it tends to take out some of the important things like free choice from the consumer, and I think the consumer should be the one that decides what's built and not built.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks for taking my call, guys, and Sybil, you're very missed.
Thank you, Shannon.
Thanks, Shannon.
I'm here every Saturday morning at 9, so tune in.
That's right.
Hey, look who's on the phone. Uncle Don is in the house. Good morning, Uncle Don.
Good morning.
Morning.
Morning, Uncle Don. I knew you would have something to say. Tell us.
I got a couple of things. Number one, on the 15% ethanol that they're thinking about, will there be anywhere that you can get gasoline that doesn't have the 15%?
Minnesota. Or Michigan.
I think they said Michigan.
They don't sell it in Michigan for sure.
They've been really slow to adopt that 15%. I think it's because there's been so much pushback. And the reason, a lot of the reason for the want to double the, or increase the ethanol by half has been industry driven from the ethanol industry, and so you have to realize that a lot of the reason we're seeing these changes is because you got a lot of lobbyists that are supporting people in Washington and getting them to vote the way they want to vote.
Well, as you know, I've got a bunch of cars, and I've got only one of them is less than 20 years old.
Right,
and they're not going to stand. I can't handle that 15% ethanol in my cars.
Well, I don't think you have to worry about it for a little while.
I don't care what the gasoline costs because we don't drive that many miles. But my second comment was, what you're saying is if they do make them put 15% ethanol in it, that I'm not going to be able to drive my cars.
Well, and that's the reality because if you have an older car, it eats up the seals. It causes scoring in the valves and the cylinders.
Yeah.
Well, so that's what we think. Well, so far,
I'll have to figure something else out.
You'll have to trade those in.
Well, there's
no cars.
No way.
It's not going to happen. Don, there's a couple of gas stations that still sell purely unleaded gas without ethanol in Dallas also.
Where is that?
There's one down on Harry Hines. It's called Super Fuels.
Yeah, all right. I'll have to try that out.
Okay. A lot of the guys that have hot rods go down there and fill them up.
Yeah, my second comment was on the older filling stations. He's talking about the sediment in the bottom of the tanks. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's been 15 years ago, or maybe 20 years ago, the government mandated that all of the tanks be replaced with new tanks that are double-walled, that don't leak. And so you don't have any old, really old tanks at filling stations anymore.
Oh, good.
So, there you have it. There's a government mandate seals that worked.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yes, because they all had to get new tanks. Either that or go out of business.
That's right. I remember they were.
A lot of, he had a lot of film stations that just closed and shut down because it cost a lot of money to put those new tanks in. They have to have leak monitors on them and all kind of things.
And that helps with the vapors and things like that?
Yeah, well, no, it's just the government, you know.
Oh.
Doesn't help with anything.
Well, thank you for your input, Uncle Don.
Okay.
Have a great weekend.
Okay, you too.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Don.
All right. We'll be back with more Saturday Morning Test Drive brought to you by Autoflex Leasing.
This is the Saturday Morning Test Drive brought to you by Autoflex Leasing.
Welcome back to the Saturday Morning Test Drive brought to you by Autoflex Leasing. David Blassingame, Tammy Picker, Gargamel, and me, Sybil. Autoflex Leasing fan text is 43733. And as always, you can call Autoflex. They are open today for your business. What are the numbers, Dave?
Either 817 or 972-234-1234, 888-234-1234. If you're out of the area, autoflex.com if you're sitting at home and want to do it on the computer.
Mm-hmm. If you don't want to get out in this funky weather. It's not raining yet, but it is funky. We do have an Autoflex Leasing fan text, and this is a question that a lot of people wonder about. I drive 100 miles a day. Is leasing an option for me?
Yes. It's according to what you're using the car for, how long you're going to keep it. But one of the things that people mess up on when they get a car, first of all, if they're driving high mileage, they go out and they buy a new car. That's problematic in that the car is going to depreciate 25 or 30% when they drive it off the lot. Real numbers. So if you buy a $30,000 car, it's probably going to be worth $22,000, $23,000 after you drive it home. It's going to lose that much value. That's first year depreciation. So you finance that car. You're going to drive it high miles. You finance it for 5 or 6 years. But you lose a third of it when you drive off the lot. And then you're driving at high miles, which makes it depreciate faster. So 2 years into the deal, 3 years into the deal, you've got a 90,000-mile car, mm-hmm. but you still have 2 years of payments left on it. And the car is not worth anywhere close to what the payoff is. So that's a mistake that people make when they drive miles, high miles, and buy a car. If you're going to drive high miles and buy a car, you should always buy a pre-owned car. And you should plan on financing the car no more than 3 years. Because you're going to mile it out in a short period of time. And you say that's terribly expensive. Well, here's the alternative, and this is the reality. We could set the lease up for you based on the right number of miles, and at the end of 3 years, you simply hand us the keys and walk away or get another car from us.
And then you're not upside down is the term that
exactly.
we use, even though it really doesn't make any sense. But financially, meaning you owe more than the car's worth.
You don't
that's upside down.
You don't want to be 3 years into a car's life with you and owe so much more on it that you can't trade out.
Let's say you were going to buy a house, but I could guarantee you that in 3 years, the house was going to be worth less than when you bought it. Would you buy it or would you rent it?
You'd rent it.
Of course you would.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with a car. If you only need to use it for a specific amount of time, just rent it because it's going to depreciate. This is not a good investment.
Well, cars aren't an investment. Cars lose money.
Put your money in something that appreciates. Now, of course, the house reference wasn't so good with some of the stuff that's been going on with the, you know, the mortgage values. But in general, your house is going to appreciate while your car definitely will depreciate. So rent that car.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Autoflex Leasing fan text. Government has a role to make decisions in policy. When the free market fails to do the right thing, fuel economy was ignored too long. Remember the oil embargo? Well, I do remember the oil embargo, but that was when the OPEC countries stopped selling us oil. It had nothing to do with fuel economy on our end. We used a lot of fuel, but we'd always used a lot of fuel, and they'd made a lot of money selling us fuel. They decided to stop selling it. Mm-hmm. And when they cut back on production and stopped shipping us oil, we had a problem, and that was a more of a political thing than a usage thing. I agree the government's role is to make decisions and policy. I'm not sure the free market does the wrong thing very much.
Mm.
There's a tremendous bias by government regulators to regulate. That's their job. They like regulating. Sometimes it works for us. Sometimes it works against us. I'm not against that at all. I think that anything that they do that costs us money, we should have a say in, though.
But no, we're not a political show, but we are reporting some political automotive news.
Yeah. I mean, stuff that the regulators do that cost you money.
We just want you to know what's going on.
Consumer awareness.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because mm-hmm. we're consumers.
We are.
Let's talk about getting a driver's license in Japan.
Woohoo!
You know, I wonder...
Not so easy like it is here.
I wonder if we had to go through what everyone else in the world had to go through to get a driver's license, if we wouldn't have better drivers out there.
True. Do you know Japan has way fewer car crash deaths than the United States,
yeah,
by far?
Even though they're smaller, they still only had 4,411 traffic deaths in 2012.
We compared to 30,000.
32,000, yeah, in the U.S. So they make them go through
huge... It's very nursemaid-like when you go through your classes. Do you know you won't even pass your driver's test if you don't walk around the vehicle first? Just like if you're about... A pilot has to do this. There's a serious checkout before they take off in a plane, all right? They have to walk around the vehicle to make sure there are no children underneath the car or behind the car.
Interesting.
They have to check to make sure no taillights are broken. There's no safety hazards, no bumpers falling off the car. They have to completely check out their car first before they take off.
You almost have to have another person in the car, though, to like push the brakes so you can make sure your brake lights work.
Well, and sure you would, almost, yeah.
And turn the
That's
lights on.
That's part of it.
Okay, first of all, it's a five-hour ordeal,
yes,
to get a driver's license in Japan.
It's a full-on
it takes
commitment.
5 hours.
My
you
gosh.
Look at videos. You have classes. You have... classes on equipment on the cars. It's sort of crazy in a way, but again, they don't have near as many people dying in car wrecks per capita as we do.
Oh, but the proctor, before you even start in the class, don't slump your heads or cross your arms in impatience. Keep all your drinks in bottles with closable caps, and by all means, keep those caps screwed tight between swigs. If you stay focused with a good attitude, 2 hours won't seem that long, she says.
And then it turns into a five-hour deal.
Right. Not counting the line.
She goes into a 10-minute lecture on proper bicycling etiquette. What that has to do with driving a car, who knows, but you'll get in quite a bit of trouble if you bicycle in the rain with an umbrella. I don't know. It's very strange.
I biked in the rain a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
But you boke. I boke in the rain. Past tense of biked, I don't know.
But some of the valuable information they learned was that in a severe earthquake, all non-emergency vehicles will be banned from entering central Tokyo on major freeways and boulevards. Interesting.
Well, and you know, one of the things they do in Japan I think probably is pretty good is if you were an older driver, you put a sticker on your window that signifies that you're an older driver.
There are special stickers, different colors for different things. Hearing impaired.
If you're a brand new driver... You put a sticker on your windshield, yeah, that says that everyone knows if it's green, they know you just got your license.
You're green.
Yeah, yeah. It's yellow rookie tape on the back of your stock car.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, same kind of thing. I've always wanted to have that here.
I know.
Especially like for bad drivers.
That'd be good.
Yeah, if somebody was really bad, if they had too many accidents and they were at fault, you know, all the time, has some kind of sticker so you would at least know who they were when you saw them.
Yes.
Yeah, like a donkey sticker.
I love that.
Donkey sticker.
There you go. You just know.
That'd be perfect.
We did just have an Autoflex fan texter. I wish they did more testing here for safe driving. I wish I would be all for it.
Yeah, a lot of people probably would. We got to wrap up our show, but we'll be back next Saturday morning at 9 a.m., so tune in. In the meantime, you can call Autoflex at either 817 or 972-234-1234. Also, visit them online at autoflex.com. For David Blassingame and Tammy Pickard, I am Sybil Summers. We'll see you next weekend. This has been the Saturday Morning Test Drive brought to you by Autoflex Leasing. Get down the stairs.